Hey everyone, Chris Wan here. This is Accent Out Loud, a podcast about one person's take on English language learning, accent modification, and communication. Hey everyone, this is episode 20. Can't believe I've made it this far. This time around, we're going to talk about something other than the Australian English accent. I might still do that on the side to show you and sort of put out there that I'm still working on it, I'm still practicing, and sort of the tidbits and little things that I'm noticing about my own accent as I try to put that on and learn it. But I think we're going to shift gears and try and talk about something else so the audience isn't so bored with me. And this week, I'm actually inspired by a journal article that I read. I actually included my written summary about it a little and my two cents in my weekly newsletter, but I've still been thinking about it. And I think the interesting thing about it was it came from an engineering journal. And typically, most of my readings and journals and things like that is coming from English language learning, linguistics, applied linguistics, articles that are directly associated with the field of acquiring a second language, phonology, morphology, basically fancy stuff in the industry of language and sounds. Whereas this one's coming from an engineering background. And it's an article that had the author send out some questionnaires, had teachers and students, both in the private sector and the public sector in Pakistan, try and pronounce some words. Now, I wasn't a fan of the methodology of the article. It's not my forte. I am typically into experimental psych or experimental linguistics and things like that with quantitative numbers and quantitative stats, whereas this seemed a bit more qualitative and not as scientifically stringent or obvious how things are being rated. But regardless, the author has some strong opinions about why Pakistani English is really suffering in comparison to other accents and other countries when they're learning English. And I didn't realize how much necessarily politics plays a role. And so one of the arguments is in Pakistan, you have Urdu and English as two official languages, but there's a mandate or there's in the constitution some legislature or some laws, and this was also supported by I think the Supreme Court or something along those lines, where someone with high authority mentioned that they want a lot of the formal government bureaucratic discussions to be happening in Urdu. So we have a significant influence of this other language other than English in the culture and making of this country. However, because it is an official language in Pakistan as well, then the issue is that people in Pakistan are expected to know English. So they don't outsource or search for English language teachers from other countries. And they compared themselves to China or Japan, where English is not necessarily not an official language. So the result is the government, whatever English language learning centers, they try to hire people with a British English accent, an Australian English accent, or a North American English accent. So they're getting someone directly from the source of the accent that they want. Whereas with the Pakistani English teachers that are being hired to run these English language learning centers, they themselves are starting with a Pakistani English accent. So it's already sort of two nodes away or two, I can't remember what the saying is, but they're not directly hearing it from the horse's mouth. They're hearing it two steps removed. And I think another insight that this article suggests is that the way that English is taught in Pakistan is that words are broken down or segmented. So a word like concentration maybe is concentration. concentration. And so it's almost syllabified or split up into its separate syllables. And my hypothesis about how this causes the change is that when you're isolating words based on syllable and you are sight reading them, you might not pronounce them the way they are actually pronounced in Australia, Britain, North America. You might actually pronounce them the way you think they should be pronounced based on the
sight read word or
vowel sound. So, for example, concentration, if you don't actually know how to pronounce that word, you might think con-ken-tra-tien. Con-ken-tra-tien. And if you have generations or different levels of people sight reading with no feedback from somebody who is from North America, Britain, or Australia, giving you that feedback, oh, it's actually concentration, then you might not catch that mispronunciation. And then it sort of spreads to other people because the teacher teaches the students repeat it. And then as they grow and become the workforce, from students to now adults in the workforce, then they are proponents or pushing the same mispronunciation. So I think syllabification or segmenting words into their separate syllables is helpful when you're first learning, but you need to say it in its entirety accurately after the fact. So let's say concentration, 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 and then speed it up, concentration, concentration, and then put it into a sentence. I'm having a hard time with my concentration. Or something like that to fortify or strengthen that connection in your mind that it's actually concentration, not concentration. Another thing that syllabification might do is you're giving equal stress to each part, each syllable, concentration. Whereas in English, the way that we pronounce words is that we will spend more time on one syllable, the primary stressed syllable. We don't say each part of the word for the equal amount of time. And that's how we get English rhythm. So if each of these words is taught and each syllable in the word is getting the equal amount of stress, and then you add multiple words together and every syllable gets the same amount of time, then you are left with a very slow and monotone way of speaking. So, I was quite interested and quite surprised, as well as starting to generate my own assumptions about what's going on in Pakistan when we're having this English. The another thing that was interesting was they found that Pakistani English teachers and speakers had a hard time recognizing whether other people were speaking in a British accent, an American accent, or an Australian accent. And what that means is there's no awareness of the consistency of one way of speaking versus another. So as a result, English is English to them, and they might pick and choose or hear different components from different speakers. Maybe one is Australian, one is English, one is British, one is North American, and they have this mishmash of and amalgamation of English, quote unquote. And as a result, that makes for a very inconsistent or unpredictable resulting English accent. It's very fascinating stuff.
Ultimately, the author feels that this was a disservice to Pakistani English learners or people that are interested in learning English because of how English is framed as an international language, as a language of business and whatnot. And part of it is also because the parents of the students seeking English tutoring are not necessarily educated and able to differentiate between the varieties of English, the level of standard that one can expect with an English language center, then it's felt from this author that a lot of the English language centers that exist in Pakistan are not up to standard or not adequate. One part of it is also that the government, one of the suggestions or one of the thoughts that the author had was that the government should step in and sort of make a more standardized process for English education, for the type of teacher, and potentially have a more consistent exemplar model for what accent of English is being held as the archetypal or ideal accent that the students should be trying to mimic or imitate. It was definitely just fascinating to hear the perspective, as I think it's a huge aspect of the English language and English pronunciation field that is not necessarily directly impacted by the necessary techniques that are being used to teach a concept or grasp an idea. I think this is just so far left field for me typically that it was just a very interesting talking point, especially to be finding that in an engineering journal versus a typical English phonology journal. So I think what it really means and boils down to is essentially when people are learning English, whether it's here, whether it's in Canada, whether it's in the States, thinking back on your first English language teacher, were they someone who had a consistent or standard North American, Canadian, American, British, Australian accent, really does dictate how you as a student learned and grasped the concept or idea of English. If your teacher had a mishmash of accent, an English accent that blurred both their native first language as well as English, then your model isn't an accurate representation of one of the three that I keep referencing. It's not a model of English, British, or American, North American English. Whereas if your teacher, your English language teacher, was an Australian English speaker, North American English speaker, or a British speaker, then it was likely more plausible or probable that you as a student would pick up their style, their manner, and imitate a more accurate representation of a understandable English accent, which would have all the, sort of a rippling effect down the road when you were looking to work in an English speaking environment, because then your model for that would be more easily reflected in the community, the English speaking community, right? If you learned from a British English speaker when you were a kid, you would pick up those British habits. So when you went to go speak later in life, when you're looking for a job in an English, maybe even in North America, people would identify your English as British English. Yes, it would be still different from the North American English that your co-workers are speaking in, but you would at least have a recognizable or consistent pattern of speech that was similar to a British English speaker. Whereas in this case, the article suggests that these Pakistani English speakers have made their own English-speaking rhythm and pattern and words that doesn't necessarily correlate or correspond with any of those other standardized and recognized English accents. And as a result, the manner of speech, the words you use, the lingo, the rhythm are all not representative and therefore much harder for a native English speaker to understand. So I think that's about it for today. This one's a little bit more theoretical and or research heavy. I'll try and get back into more practical things that you can be practicing each week. Yeah, and I'll try and still continue to put out the Australian English practice myself. Another one that I want to add to this is also sometime down the road, I want to practice trilling my R's because I can't roll my R's the way that a Spanish speaker does or a French speaker does that well. So it's on my to-do list as well. Have a good one. Bye. If you like what you're hearing, or even if you aren't, let me know. I know this podcast can be something great and educational for a lot of people. I'm here to listen, so give me your take, your likes, your dislikes, and maybe we can make this into something that'll help a lot of people. Leave a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Once I figure out how to read the reviews, I'm sure it'll help.